Where is everybody? Friday, so?
Party time.
Starting a bit early.
Too late this time.
Too late. Never too late. It's never too late. It's never too early, that's what I should say, right? Hi. Take your time. There's no rush. It's the last lecture, so it's all right. Hey. Hi. Ready? Yeah, bring it on, eh? All right, so let's do this. This is my last lecture. You're all very happy, I'm sure. So this is my last lecture, so we're going to look at the situation calculus. Well, of course, it doesn't mean it's my last lecture ever. Maybe some of you will decide to do my course in the fourth year. It's all about logic. Automated reasoning. You know, if you love resolution, well, we don't do resolution anyway, we do interactive theorem proving. But anyway, so today we're going to look at this thing called a situation calculus, which I shouldn't say this out loud, personally I find quite boring, but anyway. So, it's important stuff, you know, some people like it, and it's, you know. So this is Russell and Norvig 10.3 from the second edition. So it's not the third edition. I know I've told you to buy the third edition. So what we've done is that we've actually scanned the bits that are relevant from this section and put it on the web page for the course. So you can download it from there, right? So that's where the reading material is. So, I mean, I was toying with the idea whether to actually remove this thing altogether from the course, because actually in Russell and Norvig 10.3, they've reduced the situation calculus from like whole section to like a, it's now in the generic thing called other approaches. Really, I don't think they think much of it either. But anyway, so which is a bit weird. Anyway, so let's do this. Right, so the idea is we're going to try and use logic to come up with plans. And plans are ways of achieving particular goals that we may want to do. So the whole situation calculus is actually used quite a bit for what's known as AI planning. You're going to look at planning in more detail when you do the second part, but not necessarily in that way. So it's quite useful. I mean, I said, you know, I find it not that interesting, but that's a personal thing. It's actually quite useful thing, and it's actually used also for actual industrial processes, industrial problem solving, right? So, and what we need to do whenever we're using logic, right, if you remember, we need a way of representing the world, right? So that's the representation issue, right? And we need a way of representing the goal as well, right? And then we represent how actions are going to change the world in this case, right? So, you know, the representation problem is generic across any problem you want to model using logic, right? So you need representation, and usually you need some form of reasoning and inference, right? So in this case, we're going to use logic to come up with plans, and come on, guys. What is this? You all think it starts at 3:05, I think. Anyway, so I'll let you all settle down. There's no rush. Only like 20 slides to go through. It's all logic, and you all love that, so it's no problem. So, right, so We need to be able to do all of these kind of things, and that's what we're going to look at. So we've looked at this, but you know, when we're using this logic to sort of plan and come up with a way of solving a problem, in this case, we haven't looked too much at this, how we actually use this notion of actions that can change the world. So here, world doesn't mean the world at large generally, right? It means some kind of problem, which is your toy problem or your world, you know, some domain you're looking at. You know, maybe it's robot assembly, maybe it's moving things from place to place or whatever, right? So that's the situation, that's the state of the world. So, and the difficulty that we face to do this, right, is that after an action of some kind, right, I take this, I move this to there, right, or whatever, so there'll be new things that will be true, such as now this thing is on there, right? And some previously true facts are no longer actually the case, so it's no longer on there. But also, there's actually another problem. There's some things that are not affected. This thing is still there. I moved this from there to there. That didn't change the fact that the jug of water is still there, for instance. And we actually need to reason about this as well. Things that change, things that don't change as well, as we'll see. Okay. So what we do for this situation calculus is introduce this general idea of a situation, right? Sort of like, so the notion of this, what are these? They are actually logical terms in our language. So we're going to use first the logic to represent these things. So they're just terms, right? And what is what are situations? Well, situations are usually going to be something which consists of an initial situation, usually denoted by something like S naught, right? That's a common way of denoting the initial situation. No, mean it has to be always that, but that's a way of denoting it. And all situations generated by applying an action to a situation. So it's a very kind of recursive definition there. You have an initial situation, and from that you can get this next situation, next and next and next, right? So as you can see, it's like inductive in nature or recursive, right? And what you need to do is to state actual facts about situations, right? So how do you do this? Well, you're going to relativize the whole idea of predicates to situations. So this is going to mean, what does this mean? It means instead of having a predicate that just says some object A is on an object B, you're going to say somehow that A is on B in some situation S naught, for instance. So you need to say, okay, my predicate is also going to take into account, it's going to be relative to some situation, right? Okay? So then what you have this notion of situation. It's a kind of inductive definition for it. And actions, basically, based on what we said here, well, they're performed in a particular situation, and they produce new situations with new facts, right? And what we're going to see is that your situation, in this case, when we're looking at it logically, is just going to be a group of facts, for instance, that hold at a particular point, right? So example of actions, for instance, if we're looking at our Wampus world, would be like forward, turn right, move. Well, no, yeah, I can't even remember what they were. Turn right, what was the other one? Was it move? Just go to show, grab, things like that, okay? So are you all happy with this? All right, so how do we do this? Well, working in logic, it's actually trivial to get this whole, talking about particular predicates relative to a situation. We can do this like this. We can just add an extra argument for a situation to each predicate that can change. So nothing too complicated. We just say instead of having this on AB, we're just going to have on AB, for instance, in S naught, right? We just have the situation as an argument, okay? And we can do that, right? This is a predicate. This is just, like I said, it's a term, right? So we can say that, right? Or alternatively, what we could do is to introduce a predicate holds and turn on, etc. So now what we do, we could have another predicate which says on now is a function. It says it is the case that it holds that A is on AB in S naught. So sometimes holds is known as a meta predicate because it's talking about the world. It's saying something about something holding in the world, right? So this is more like, you know, sometimes this is said, known as an object level kind of way of expressing things. It's about the objects at the same level. And this one is the whole predicate that sort of says something about the world or about the situation, right? It says that in S naught on AB. So what do things like on AB now mean? Well, it can just mean a category of situations where actually A is on B, right? These are all the possible categories of situation where this is on this, for instance, right? It's like this. This is a particular situation there where I have all this arrangement. I move this to there. That's a new situation where this is now there, right? And I try to characterize this using logic, right? And I move this to there. This is a new situation, but this one is still on there, for instance. And this is a category of situation. Or it could be a set of those situations. So that's just a term, okay? Any questions? So far, so boring? All right. Okay, so how will this work? Let's assume we look at a toy problem. This is known as the block world problem. It's well known, it's used for all sorts of examples. If you pick anything on planning, AI, whatever, they always use the block world example. And it's a toy problem. There's nothing too deep going on, but it works well to illustrate what we're talking about. So what we can say is that before some action, we might have in our KB, for instance, that A is on B, right? So A, we write this like this, A is on B in S naught, and B is on the table itself, right? So B is on the table in S naught. And there could be other facts. Maybe there's another block there that's there, et cetera, right? So this is the initial thing before we do some action. What we want to say is that after some action that moves, for instance, A on the table, we need to add new facts. We need to say, well, how do we characterize this new situation? So we call it S1, for instance. What can we say about this? Is that, for instance, well, now B is clear. There's nothing on B, right? And A is now on the table in S1, right? Like I said, you know, you move this to there, that's a new situation, right? So that's one way of characterizing it, so some action. So all these propositions are true, right? What we have done is to deal with the issue of change by keeping track of what is true and when, right? So this is what is true before some action, and this is what is true after that particular action of moving A from B onto the table. Okay? Yeah? I think, you know, if you look at this, there's nothing magical going on. It's just saying, you know, we just have facts about particular situations here. But we move this, this is no longer S0, this is now S1 because it's a new state of the world. Okay? Or in new arrangements in the world. So if I use the slightly different notation that I had before, I could just use this like this. I can say in S naught it holds that A is on B, and it is true that it holds that B is on the table in S naught as well. After the action, we just write it like this. It holds that B is clear in S1, and A is on the table in S1 it also holds. That's just another way of doing it. They're both perfectly fine. That, you know, you can pick either way of expressing this. Okay? So what about the actions, though? So we have an idea, you know, we can represent this kind of logically for the situations. These are the facts that are going to hold, right? As you can see, right, so if you look at this, S1 and S0 in this case, right, so we're just saying S0 there. We're not actually saying anything in particular about S0 or S1. We need to come up with ways of looking at this. How do we get this S1? What does it mean? Right, so, okay. So what we need to represent is the result of doing an actual action, right, moving something to somewhere. And also, many actions are conditional, right? So conditions that need to be in place to perform an action. For instance, I don't know if this is fixed. No, it's not. So maybe it's fixed, right? Or maybe it's too heavy. You know, if it's light enough, I can move it from there to there, right, for instance. So there might be conditions on particular action, right? So what we can do is to define functions to abbreviate actions. So for instance, we can have the notion of saying move AB, which we saw already. That denotes the action type of moving A onto B. So it's kind of an abstract way of looking at it, saying, you know, this is the moving A onto B. It's a type of action, right? These are action types as opposed to actual actions, because actions themselves are more specific, or specific to time, position, or whatever. So they're a bit more abstract. So this is like, this is the idea of moving from this to this. I mean, it could be moving from there to there, involves going there, you know, going like this, or it could be like, you know, like this or whatever, right? So it's abstracting away from this. It's just saying move AB. Maybe there's a big wall there. How do I move it from there to there, right? Maybe I can go through the wall or something. But anyway, so what we do after this, and what we can do, is to introduce a function also called result, what's going to designate the situation resulting from doing a particular action type like move, you know, in some situation, right? So for instance, we can say the result of move AB in S naught means the situation resulting from doing an action type of move AB in situation S naught, right? So we're going to have this. Then what we're able to say is that S1 is actually going to be equal to this, the new situation that we get. Right? So result is going to designate the situation resulting from doing an action type on the situation. Right? So we got this. Does this make sense? Questions? Okay. So how does this work now? So you keep in mind that we have this now, things such as result, move AB in S naught, and these are terms that denote situations, right? So this is a term that denotes a particular new situation of, you know, the result of moving AB in situation S naught is a new situation. So basically, they can appear anywhere we'd expect a situation, right? These are just terms. So what we can say, we can actually say something like this. S1 is equal to the result of moving AB in S naught. So we get a new situation like this. Or we could also say this, right? On AB, result of move AB in S naught. Because that's a situation there, right? Remember, we can augment our predicate to a free place one, for instance, that it takes into account situations. Or we can write something like this, right? So they're just logical terms. They're just terms in first order logic, right? So alternatively, we could also write it like this, holds on AB in the situation where you have the result of moving AB in S naught, right? Okay, so these are all just talking about representation so far. But we're not done yet, right? So we need to actually come up with ways of axiomatizing the actions that we may do, right? So what are the results? So we describe the results of actions together with the preconditions. Remember, we said that there might be preconditions of a particular action. So here's the example. Well, if nothing is on X and Y, right, so both X and Y are clear, right, there's nothing on top of them, then one can move X on top of Y, in which case X will then be on Y, right? So how do I represent this using logic? I can say for all X, Y, S, so for any X and Y, if X is clear in a situation S, right, for any situation S, and Y is also clear, well, then I end up with this, on X, Y, in this new situation there, which is the result of moving X, Y in S. Happy with that? Right, so alternatively, I could write it like this. This is just the one where I use holes as the meta predicate there. Right? And this has a name. So what you need to do, this is known as an effect axiom. Right? In this case, it includes a precondition as well there. Sometimes it could be just this. Maybe it is possible to just move something onto another thing. Right? But in this case, we want to say it has. You can't have this on top of this and then try to move. You can't have this on top of this and try and move this one underneath it. You can only move something that is clear. So what happens is that if you're given a particular situation and you're asked to represent it in the situation calculus, you need to identify, okay, what are the constants? How are you going to represent the initial situation? And you need to come up with these effect axioms for the various actions that you can do in that world. Right? So if you read that section that I mentioned, so I'll mention this again, right? So this bit is not in Russell and Novick 10, the third edition, it's in the second edition. So we've scanned the pages from the second edition that are needed that go with this lecture, they're on the web page, so you should read from there, right? So you need to come up with effect axiom for the various action that you're going to have in your particular, in your particular characterization of a problem using the situation calculus. Okay? Keep going then. So this is it. So this is the approach which is known as generally as situation calculus. So we axiomatize all our actions, right? Then use a general theorem prover to prove that a situation exists in which our goal is true. What do I mean by a general theorem prover? Meaning that you can use a resolution theorem prover, for instance, or one that uses backward chaining or forward chaining, for instance, right? So you can use a general kind of theorem prover, nothing specific about it, because what you're doing is you're using first of the logic in this case to represent the world, the situation, and everything. So really, you end up with just sentences in first of the logic, and you can use a general theorem prover, or you can use, we'll see an example where you can just use resolution right at the end, right? So then what happens, the actions that we have in the proof, that basically is going to give us our plan, right? So we're going to have, for instance, a sequence of moves, result move in A, B, and S1, move B, C, and S0, whatever. So this gives us the sequence of these various actions are going to give us our actual plan that we need to do. We can extract it from the proof. Right? It's a number of moves if it's the block world, for instance. Okay? So here's a simple example. We've got everything. We start. So we can say, okay, imagine this is our initial situation. We have the table there. We have A's on the table, C's on the table, and B's on C. So we try to characterize this. We say, okay, in our initial situation, we just write these particular facts about it to do with like the actual characterization of the world. So A's on the table in S0, B's on C in S0, and C's on the table in S0. And we also say that there's nothing on top of A and there's nothing on top of B, right? So this is just characterizing this, how it looks like. What we're going to have in our KB are these facts, right? And also we're going to have the axioms about the various actions, right? So for instance, we're going to have this axiom about moving. Oh, yeah, right. So for instance, about the action of moving something from one position to another, or from one block to another, from the block onto the table, right? Yeah. So we have all this, we have our axioms, and we can say, okay, give me some situation, figure out what the situation is going to be such that A is on top of B. Right? Of course, it looks trivial, right? What does it mean in this case? We look at this and say, oh, why are you bothering us with this? But you want to do this systematically. Really, what you want is this situation to say it's the result of move A onto B in situation S naught. Right? So basically take this and move it to there, and you get a new situation, and you can read what happens there. Right? So what do we want to prove? Well, we want to prove that on AB S prime for some S prime. Remember, because we have an existential quantifier there, right? So we're going to just assume we're not going to, this is not a refutation way of doing it. It's not a resolution proof, right? Or we can try and do this. We'll see if we have to do a resolution proof, then we have to negate the goal, if you remember, right? So what we can do in this case, we can say, okay, let's find an axiom that I can actually use, right? That where, you know, I can actually unify this with this, for instance, right? But through, you know, and then use backward chaining, okay? So, you know, so by chaining, so for instance, the goal would be true if we could prove this, right? So basically, if we manage to unify this with this, right? Assuming, you know, we can drop the quantifiers and we know what the variables are, so we can do a unification between these two. Then if we're able to prove these two goals, these two premises as new sub-goals suitably instantiated, then we should be able to prove, you know, we should be able to get the action that we knew. So if we unify this with this, really what we want to show is that A is clear in situation S and B is clear in some situation S, right? Remember, we're trying to solve for some S there in this case, right, by backward chaining. Well, but this is trivial in this case, right? Both are true in S node because we actually have these as facts there, right? So we end up saying, okay, so we can conclude that on AB is just the result of move AB in S node. You follow this? Because we just instantiate this and we instantiate these two with the facts in the knowledge base and we're done. Questions? You follow this? Do you have any questions? Does this make sense, roughly? So what we do then is, okay, so we've defined this, we look in the proof and see only one action, move AB in S node, and this is our plan in this case. It's really trivial. It's saying, if this is the initial situation, as you would expect, to get a situation where you have A on top of B, well, you move this there, right? That's one plan. Of course, there could be other plans, right? Could there be other plans? Well, this case is a bit more difficult, probably. So if we assume that, you know, that's interesting. So you can't move this on there because the table is not clear. So unless you assume that the table, you can move several objects on there, then there could be another plan. But if you assume you can never move the table. Well, no. So this is clear, so you can move this. Well, no, you can't. So yeah, so that's interesting. So it's not saying anything about whether you can move two objects on the table. If there's already something on the table, whether you can move something on top of it. Otherwise, if it doesn't, then this means you can move this there and then move this on top of there. That would be a different plan. Any of you ever done you know about the Tower of Hanoi? So that's also a very good toy problem to play with these kind of things in terms of planning how you're going to get this sorted out, okay? And all of them together. Right, so here's a different example, which I say is tougher. It's tougher because we're going to see we can't solve it. It looks trivial. It's the same initial world, the goal is slightly harder. So we're going to say, okay, we have the same initial situation, S node, and we want to have a situation where, find a situation where A is on B and B is on C. If you look at this, you're thinking probably, you know, this is trivial, right? Because it's intuitively not really hard, because we already know that B is on C, we can just move this on top of this. Right? But what we're going to see is that things don't work that easily when you're just using your theorem proof and your axioms, if it's just axioms about actions, actually. Right? So intuitively, it's nothing more complicated, but it actually, to do use the theorem proof, it doesn't work. So suppose we try to first prove this particular sub-goal there. Right? So we want to prove on AB in some S prime. Right? So what we can do is use the same axiom as before. So again, by chaining, so this is identical to the previous example, we end up with on AB, the result of move AB S node, right? So nothing's changed there, right? So abbreviating, if we say this is just called S1, we have on AB in S1, right? So this is exactly as we had before. You're happy with that, right? Well, what do we need to do, though? Remember, our goal consists of two conjuncts, right? So we prove this, we can sort out this bit, but we now have to prove this one, right? So the other sub-goal is going to be, if we substitute for S prime using this, makes it on B, C, S1. If we can show that this is true, then we're done, right? But the problem is, the prover can't prove that. We have no reason to believe that this is still the case. Of course, you look at this, you think, you know, if I move this on top of this, common sense tells me B hasn't gone anywhere. But, you know, what is common sense to a theorem prover? He doesn't know anything about this, right? Well, it's true. It has no common sense. It has none whatsoever. So, unfortunately, once we do this, there's no way of proving this because we want to prove we have this particular thing as a fact, right? So remember, this was given to us. We know that B is on C in S node. But this is a new situation. How does the planner know that this is still true? Right? How do we prove that this is still the case? Right? In fact, it's not possible. So if you're using your general approach using a theorem prover, you've got your axioms about actions, and you're trying to do this, it actually won't find an answer. It actually fails for something that is actually trivial, right? Because if you look at this, you say, well, I just move it there. I don't need a planner to do this.
What happens if you start with the second one?
What do you mean? Well, how do you, so you have this in S naught. So you're going to say on BC in S naught. Yeah, well, that one will be, this is the one that doesn't do anything. But, no, but remember, it's not going to work. It's not, is it? Or can you? If you match it against this, yeah, you get like, if you try to solve the second one. Well, in this case, nothing will happen, really. You haven't, S0 is not, yeah. So, yeah, I see what you mean. So if you try to unify this one first.
You will get, it will be S0 still, but there's nothing has changed. And then you will know that when you go to S1, you have already.
Yes, but Torvald is on AB S prime and on BC S prime. And then in that case, S0 is not equal to S1. So
could you change, like,
you can't change the state if you don't do anything. Not the state. Don't call it state. The situation. There's a multiple choice question in the past exam paper. You see, it says, what is the best way of describing what a situation is? I think it's a multiple choice question. Is it a state? Is it a history of what's happening? And loads of people go for state, and it's not. Yeah, trick question. The fact that it's an S doesn't help either. Yeah, so. Well, but then if you on BC, so the result of moving B on C, is that clear? Oh, but that wouldn't work because C is not clear. You can't because C is not clear. Because you would try to unify this with this, right? You would have moved B on C, but it involves having to show that C is clear. No, but you don't want to move it, but you don't know that, right? So this, you can't actually do this one first. You would fail. You would then try and do that one. You can't prove that one if you do it first.
Can you just add the new axiom that's saying B on top of A, or B on top of C, and you don't move anything?
Yeah, that's exactly what we need to do. You didn't look at the slides, did you? good. You did. Well, that's exactly what we need to do. So your solution is not a solution because this one will fail. You can't prove that one. So, right, where were we? Yes, so we're going to do what he's saying. We're going to have what's known as these frame axioms, right? So what we have is known as, it's a general problem in AI. It seems probably trivial, but it's actually something that stumped people for a while. What we have failed to express is the fact that everything that isn't changed by an action stays the same. It sounds trivial, but it's not, the theorem prover has no way of knowing this, right? So if not changed by an action, it stays the same. So what we have is this frame problem, and how do we fix this? We have the notion of frame axioms, right? So for instance, just to take an example, we could say, well, if X is clear in situation S, the result of painting that particular X, you know, if I do this and I get a new situation, it's still the case that X is clear. Nothing happens to it, right? So these are actions that won't affect particular objects, for instance. So it's, why is it called the frame problem? Because it's supposed, it's related, it's based on the fact of, like, you have movie frames, film, you can see what changes from frame to frame, right? And it's actually well understood, right? So you all know about MPEG and all this kind of compression, and JPEG and all this. MPEG is about compression and only about the things that change from frame to frame, right? You don't care about what doesn't change. You don't need to carry this information forward. So the idea of the frame axiom is to basically try to capture everything that doesn't change from doing a particular action. So moving A onto B, you know, the table itself doesn't move, for instance, or things like that. Well, we're going to see for move, right? So the problem is that we end up with loads of these. Imagine if you have like 50 actions, and most of these actions don't affect most of the objects. You have 50 actions, 100 objects in your world, and most of the actions don't affect most of the other objects, affect one or two. I mean, can you imagine how quickly you would have loads of this? And the question is this a big problem? It is, right? It is a problem. The problem is because your theorem prover is a general theorem prover, you end up with loads of axioms or loads of rules that you can apply or loads of clauses. It just makes the search space much bigger, right? So you don't want to be able to, you don't, writing loads of this is not very nice. So we can actually, but fortunately there's a way of dealing with this that can make it slightly nicer, right? So you can have neater formulation of this where you're actually going to try and specify things. So here's one way of specifying what it means. I don't know how intuitive this is going to be because, you know, whenever I try to read this in kind of intuitive way, I fail. So this is saying, you know, what you're going to try to capture is that if X is on Y in situation S, right, and anything that you do, which is a move of X onto some Z, but, you know, really Z is still Y, nothing's changed, this means that X remains on Y in S, in the new situation. Can you actually see this? If any move that I make means that, you know, moving X to Z, if I were to move it effectively, it's still put, right, because this Z is actually the same Y where it was there, then nothing's happened. X remains on Y in that particular new situation there. No? Yes? So if you can't get this, so if you look at past exam papers again, you'll see that you're given a new situation about, one problem may be about lifts, you know, how to characterize this using the situation calculus, and you're asked to come up with a frame with the verse, you know, the axiom for some of the actions, and also the frame axioms for the actual particular actions that you may do. So it's not that trivial, actually. But they all follow this general idea where you want to say something is true and the action doesn't affect it in some way or another, then it stays true, right? So this bit is the easy bit. It's coming up with this bit that's a more difficult one, right? And what we can do, actually, we can make this even slightly nicer. We can remember, if you remember, we had these, the effect axiom for move, right? So this is the effect axiom there, or written slightly differently. What we can do is to combine the effect axiom with a frame axiom for each of these actions and actually come up with what's known as the successor state axiom. So this tells you how things change from one situation to another. So you're going to say X is on Y in this new situation where you do this particular action in situation S, right? If it was the case that nothing happened to it, right? Yeah, so, you know, I did a move, but that move really, it wasn't a move that actually changed anything, right? Right, so Y remained Y, Z remained Y, basically, if I did this move. Or it was the case and I actually did do a move, right? X was clear, Y was clear, and A is the move from X onto Y. It has two parts. So this is what happens, the new situation there. It results from either nothing happening or actually making the move. Any question? So what this is saying is, I can have this on top of this in two ways, right? Either it was always on there, or I actually moved it. And this is someone's diary there. Anybody? Any Lara Budge here? No.
Nope.
All right. Yeah. Right. So, how does this help? Well, now we can solve our example, right? This example that's so difficult for the theorem prover to do, but it's trivial for us to do, right? So we want to prove this again, so we prove the first one. On BC is the result of moving A, B in S node, so that's the new thing we want to prove, given that we had on BC in S node, right? So what the axiom says is this, so this is what we just saw, this is the successor state axiom, right? So really, if we assume this, you know, nothing happened, right? So B didn't move from C. We want to show that on B, C, S node, so we instantiate, you know, we may decide to work backwards, so we want to prove this bit, right? On B, C, S node, and for all Z, if I move A, B, right, if I move A onto B, and I move B onto Z, right, so remember, I get this by just instantiating this to this, right, and looking at this part, because we don't care about that part, right? Then I have to prove that C is equal to Z, or Z is equal to C, is true. We want to show that this is true, right? So how do we do this? It's actually easy now, right? So we want to prove this situation, this new thing, and really what's happening is that nothing happened to it. B remained on C by moving A on B, nothing changed nothing, right? So the first conjunct is trivial because that's already in the knowledge base, right? We knew about this to start with. How do we prove that one? Well, this one is easy as well. It is actually true since the actions are the same, only if they have the same name and involve the same exact object, right? For this to be true, right, move AB is equal to move BZ, it has to be that, you know, using this particular axiom, so we need extra axioms to our knowledge base, that it is the case that B is equal to Z, and B is equal, A is equal to B, and B is equal to Z, right? And we know that A is not the same as B. We have this already, that all the constants are going to be distinct. So that's another thing we have. So if we have this, we now have that this is false. False implies anything is true. So effectively, we can prove our goal. Right? No? Yes? So what do we need? We need to have this as an extra axiom in our knowledge base. So this is this. And we also have another one, which is this one, which just says AX1 to XM is not equal to BY1 to YN if A and B are not the same, or they don't have the same number of arguments, for instance. Right? And these two together are known as the unique action axioms. Basically, it enables you to decide whether two actions are actually identical. Right? So in this case, then we're able, so because we have this new axiom in our knowledge base, which is the successor state axiom for move, we can actually prove the second part, because it's basically saying the moving AB didn't change the fact that B was still on whatever, was still on C. Questions? No questions still? You guys are very quiet. So the way we've done this, it's slightly informal actually. If I wanted to do this using forward or backward chaining, I would need to peel away the quantifiers and do all these kind of things, right? So this would break into two directions, for instance. So that's one way. What if we wanted to do this using a refutation system, right? So for a refutation system, like using resolution, what we would need to do is that we actually need to take a goal. So suppose this is the goal that we have, right? So what we need to do in resolution, we need first to negate the goal, right? So you remember this. So what we would do in this, so this is saying for all x, there exists a y such that g of xy. So we're trying to find some y that's going to satisfy this goal for all x, right? So what we do in this case, we need to negate this, and we can use our usual equivalences about pushing it for all and existential, so we can push this in there. So actually, what we do in this case, we're not using anything. So we're just pushing, yeah, we are. So we're pushing the negation inside. So we end up with the existing x for all y, not g of xy, right? Then we do what we need to do, because remember, when we're working in closal form, we don't have any quantifiers. Exactly. We don't have any quantifiers, so we drop the existential quantifier in this case. So we end up with this as our goal. How do we drop the existential quantifier? Well, it's easy. We just replace it with a column constant, right? And y is just a for all, we just drop it and we have a variable here. So this is a constant, they're beating up a case here, right? So as you can see, there's nothing too magical going on. It's just to tell you that, and the thing is, this is known as dual scolemization. It's still scolemization when you're working under negation, but it is dual scolemization. Why is it dual scolemization? Why might it be called dual scolemization? Any idea? Because if you were doing normal scolemization, you would scolemize this one instead, right? This would become a function of x. Remember we saw this, yes, was it yesterday? One of these, not too long ago. I think it was yesterday. So, but anyway, the idea is that you need to remember if you're working with a refutation system. So if I give you a particular problem and I say, okay, characterize the action that can be done, you know, in this particular world, right? So you come up with your successor state axiom, you come up with your actual actions about the various actions, you come up with the characterization of the initial situation, and then what you might want to do is say, okay, give me a proof that it's going to be the case that I can move A on top of B, for instance, right? Or whatever. So, and I said, do this using a resolution. The first thing you need to do, you need to figure out what the goal is, you formulated it, but you need to negate the goal, right? Because remember, you're going to try and derive the empty clause. So what's the intuition behind all of this is that y is to be unified to construct a witness, right? So this is the idea. So that's why y is still available, and x naught itself must not be instantiated. You want to show that for any x it's the case, right? So that's the idea. That's why we end up with this, right? And it's a similar story for generalized mode exponents, but the goal is not negated. So in this case, you just end up with g of x naught and y, right? So you can drop, because remember, so in this case, actually this is going to just be your goal. For some y is... what does this mean? Oh, right. But goal is not negated. For some y, if used as goal, what? This is gibberish. So g of yx, no, for some y, right, if this is used as the goal, as we saw in our example, well, there's a dot there, and this should be an if. Yeah, this is what happens when you make changes to the slides like 15 minutes before your lecture. So this is exactly what happened in our example here, right? So this is our goal here. Basically, we end up with this. In this case, if we're not doing a refutation system, this becomes something we need to instantiate, right? So we're going to end up with on AB S prime, for instance, that we need to solve, right? Like we have here. That's all this is trying to say. Actually, I thought about removing it. I'll fix that. So this is all very nice. And here's one way of looking at this. So if I give the same problem we have as before, and you're asked to do it using resolution now to prove, give a proof, and you're all very excited. So what you need to do is to convert everything that you have as your axioms into this closal form, right? So remember, so this is the goal that we had before, right? So this is this goal. Oops. It's this goal. So how do I convert this into closal? So how do I use this for resolution? What do I do first? I negate it, right? So I have a negation there, so I move the negation inside, so I end up with not for all S prime, not this and this, but then it's not on or not BC. So I can drop the quantifier very easily. So this is why I end up with this as the goal, right? So in this case, all the uppercase letters are actually, you know, actually constants here, and the variables are the lowercase ones, right? So this is my goal now specified as in closal form. Right? This is the same as before, and this is my effect axiom expressed as a clause as well. Right? So remember the effect axiom. Right? And these are my various frame axiom, for instance. So you'll notice something, right? If you want to do this frame axiom that we had before. Right? So we're looking at just the frame axiom there. So for instance, if we look at this there, so this is, if I want to convert this to closal form, I end up with a scalum function here. Right? And you see how this works? Function. Oh, yeah, it is, because it's on the left-hand side of the implication, so it's going to be negated. So you end up with an existential there, so you end up with this column. So you should try this. So one exercise that you should try is to see how to get these from the various statements that we had before, right? So these are just the frame axioms, so these are all stated as clauses now. So we also have these, the unique axioms, such as move AB is not the same as move BZ, etc., etc., and the unique name axiom, which says that we have a disequality between every pair of constants. So A is not equal to B, B is not equal to C, etc., etc., right? Okay? So if we have this particular situation, how do we go about doing this? Here's the proof. So this is the resolution proof where we try to say, okay, I want to prove this as my, this is my goal, and how do I try to resolve it against whatever I have from before? And once again, remember we use this, so we can say, okay, I can try and resolve this against this bit there in my effect axiom, which gives me the new resolvent. So these bits, these two go away, and you end up with instantiation for the various variables. So you end up with not clear AS, not clear BS, or not on BC in this particular situation. Right, and you can keep going like this. So now you say, okay, because remember, this is a refutation. You're trying to derive the empty clause to prove your goal. So you keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, and effectively you can derive the empty clause. And then you read off what you have to do basically from the proof. Right. So you just read this. So really, to solve this, it's just the result of moving A onto B in S node, same as before. Any questions? As you can see, right, so I'm just giving the completed proof. If I were to ask you to actually do this, right, coming up with this tree doesn't mean, you know, it's easy to do it, to look at the finished tree, right? But of course, you know, if this were, you know, if you're using an actual theorem prover, or you're actually trying to do this on pen and paper, there might be several solutions for this, right? And you might go down a branch and then decide, oh, that's not right, I need to do a different branch, right? The search space doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be nicely kind of linear like this, progressing each time doing binary resolution against one. So you should practice resolution. You'll see this in your next tutorial. Any questions about this? Or generally about this lecture? No? You understand everything is crystal clear? No, you don't. You don't, yeah. Well, maybe you do actually. Why am I being so cynical? You do understand it all, and it's great. So what have we got here? Basically, by doing this kind of approach, right, effectively, we can solve the representational part of the frame problem, right, by having the, you know, successor state and all this. But we still have to compute that everything that was true that wasn't changed is still true. So it doesn't mean we don't have to do this. We still have to do this bit, right, to show that this thing is still true. This is the bit, you know, this is this, right? This is the bit in there that you still need to do this, which is really annoying. You would wish that you don't have to talk about things that don't change. But right now, we can't do anything about this. So what people have done is actually say, okay, it's all very good that you can do this with a general theorem prover, a resolution theorem prover, or something that uses like generalized modus ponens, backward, forward chaining. What you want to do is actually come up with special systems that actually encode a lot of these kind of things. So, and special purpose representations, special purpose algorithms, and these are called planners. And there's some really, really sophisticated planners out there that are used for real world problems, which are really massive problems, right? So they're used for all sorts of things to do with logistics to do, especially logistics actually. They use for like scenarios where you have catastrophes, natural disasters, and all these kind of things in terms of planning. How you're going to solve these all these various issues, you know, getting aid or help or whatever, getting something from A to B, right? So a lot of this work is done here in this, as part of my institute in the informatics. And there's a group called the Artificial Intelligence Application Institute. They do a lot of work involving planning, and they get a lot of contract from companies, from industry. They actually do a lot of work for some reason with the American military, right? Because probably need to decide how to move the tanks and all these kind of things, right? It's true, actually. It's not completely, I'm not making this up completely. Yeah. How to move the missiles. Hey?
To?
To where? Oh, no. Yeah. I see. Oh, no, is hostile. Right. So here's the brief summary. So we look at the general first notion of planning and the notion of situations and situation calculus. So remember this, situations are not states, right? They're more than that, right? And we look briefly at the frame problem. There's a lot more going on. So these things have evolved to what's known as the event calculus and all these kind of things. You're actually going to look at all sorts of types of plannings in the second part, such as partial order planning and all sorts of things like that with Alex Laskaridis from next week onwards. And that's me done. So, any questions before you stop seeing me for a while, or for a long while?
You said situations aren't states.
They're not states.
How would you like give a blanket definition?
Well, as you can see, right, S naught in itself here, right. This is the kind of intuitive way of looking at it, saying this S naught is not defined. The way I look at it is that, you know, a state really. Yeah, oops, not a state. A situation really is this, right? Is basically is the sequence of the history of the moves, for instance, that you have to make, the history of the actions. So this one, for instance, it would keep building if you had to do several. It'd be like the result of moving A, B, and S naught is 1, and then you can have the result of moving something in S1, if this is called S1, for instance. So you keep having this. So really, it's like a snapshot, right, telling you how you, it's a history of the various actions that you had to do. That's one way of describing it.
So it would be equivalent to a state.
No.
It didn't depend on them being defined by earlier.
But states are usually.
Whereas states are usually self-contained.
Well, yeah, in a way, that's one way of looking. If you say that the state doesn't contain any history or any, you're just saying this is the state. Well, nothing prevents you from having states that keep histories, right?
So how is that a state?
Because it's, you would have to say it's a state if I can keep a history of whatever I've done to get to that state, for instance. But just generally, you could say this is a state of the world, which doesn't tell you how you got there. I know, it's one of these things. So. But it's up to you. But I think what's important here is that you can read the situation and it tells you what is it that you did to get to that particular situation, starting from S naught usually. Any other question? No? Okay, so this is it. Thanks very much for being a very, very good audience over the past few weeks, and maybe I'll see some of you later. Don't forget, we're not done yet. You still have to finish the assignment. And any questions about my part of the course at any time? I still have a question outstanding for someone. I forgot about this. You can email me when you're doing your revision or whatnot, and it's not a problem. I usually answer the questions. You have to do the past exam questions. That's also quite important. And the thing about Inf2D is that it's not deviating in terms of the format from the previous years, right? It's going to be multiple choice and then choice of questions for each part. So if you do the past exam question and you do them well, then you should be okay. But like I said, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to ask me. Thank you very much. Okay. You're not getting an easier exam paper because of this.